Welcome to another episode of the Promo News Podcast in association with Loop Talent, with me, Robbie Litsky, and David Knight. And for our last podcast of the year, we are talking to a music video director who has been hugely prolific in 2022. Charlie Sarsfield has worked with a range of artists over the past 12 months, including Mabel, George Ezra, Louis Tomlinson, Koji Radical, and Youngblood, some of them on several occasions. Charlie began his journey in music visuals by working at MTV, then broke into music videos as half of directing team for Action Films. And as he reveals during our conversation, his solo career has progressed in spite of a serious health emergency he experienced 2 years ago. But we began with David asking Charlie to take us back 12 months to the start of his collaboration with Koji Radical.
The first Koji video for Gangster, that actually came about, it was almost out exactly a year ago, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, that was just before Christmas, which is crazy because I suppose it's one of those when you're in it and you're working so much, time really does fly, especially when, you know, we've had some weeks where we've been on set 3 or 4 times a week. So then you really don't have much time to look at the clock, really.
No, yeah, of course not.
And how did that first video with Koji come about?
In terms of that Koji one, I think it was born out of a very natural circumstance. I think me, myself and Marsha spoke on the phone for about an hour. I think they were talking to some people, but nothing really had landed. And Marsha called me and we kind of spoke for an hour and she asked me loads about my life and I kind of told her. And after that conversation, I think that she realized there was maybe more common ground than she first thought. And so I wrote a treatment and spoke to Koji and Marsha quite a few times. And then it kind of just happened. It was stressful. Obviously, every music video has its challenges, but we were in a tiny house in the middle of nowhere, really. And they were like, you know, when you're in a tiny house and you've got a big crew and a big cast, because Koji's whole family turned up. And then there was also it was quite weird. You had Koji's family on one side and then you had the cast Koji's family. And it was a full on run, but it was good for personal reasons. I think it's one of I put it up there with one of my finest achievements. Like, I'm really proud of that film. And it definitely stirred a lot in both myself and Marsha, and with the album, doing what the album's done, it's a real honor to do that video.
I mean, do you want to go into a bit about why that you connected with Marsha and why things in your life were parallel?
I suppose with them. Well, I suppose like my dad left when I was quite young, and you know, we have a limited relationship, and my mum, through her faults, has kind of always been someone that I've been very fond of. But like, I left home when I was 9 or 10 and I moved in with my grandparents in Cornwall. So my mum and dad kind of, it was that age of raves and drugs and all of that stuff. And I kind of was in that world as a young person. Like, my mum and dad broke up when I was born, basically, and then I lived with my mum kind of Monday to Friday, saw dad at weekends, but it was kind of like two mad houses that I'd kind of tread between. And then we lived in India for like, we drove around India on a motorbike when I was like 5, and then my mum came pregnant with my sister called Silver, and then so we came back, and then we lived in Italy for a bit and Spain for a bit, and then eventually I found myself in Cornwall with my grandparents, who kind of took all the craziness that I'd seen and kind of made me. So it's quite fun. And then,
so you had a bit more structure in your life and things got maybe a little bit more conventional after that?
Stuff got more conventional. You know, I went to school, I think at primary school I had like an 8% attendance record, and then when I went to school, like, my granny, she was a nurse, so she kind of saw straight through all of the bullshit. But no, they were the best. Like, that, I'm a product of them. Well, I'm a product of everything. Like, I think you have to appreciate the faults as much as the good things in everything. So
I get it. So how did you get into, from then, into making films, being a director?
I suppose as with kind of every story on this podcast, is kind of like one of those by chance kind of thing. I studied photography at university, so that was kind of my grounding, and I was always obsessed with like Rob Lees-Luxembourg and Crystal Labasse and like these photographers that made these surreal abundance of color, very based at nighttime. Rob Lees-Luxembourg did like the Streets album artwork and did Block Party's album artwork and all of that, and I was like, I want to make that. That's what I want to do. And then I, you know, as like a 19-year-old at uni, living in the dark rooms during the day, going out at night, I'd go to like a lot of like, kind of like, I don't know, I was interested in so much different type of music, and I found myself at a communion night, which is run by Mumford & Sons, or like the guys at Mumford & Sons, and I ended up working, which essentially was taking photos of their artists for free, and then met someone through that who was like, you should do video, and I was like, sick, I'll buy a camera, and I bought a 5D Mark II, and my friend played the guitar called Ollie Muto, and we shot loads of stuff, and then that led to me getting a runner's job at MTV, and it was actually at a production company called Remedy, but we did lots of the MTV stuff, but I just worked in the studio, so every weekend I'd steal cameras, I met Stormzy around that time, so that must have been 8-9 years ago, and he'd come into the studio and we'd shoot stuff, and then like it was just kind of like a space in which we could do with whatever we wanted, and then basically I shot a video for Sean Paul randomly, one of my friends at the time. So I used to work in a duo, and there's an artist who is a very good friend called Protégé, who's one of the big Jamaican artists, like frontline of the new wave of Jamaican music. We made a video for him, and then somehow that we shot it here in London, and then somehow that translated into Sean Paul going, I'm doing Carnival, I need some guys to run around and make a music video with me, Marshall Montano and Major Lazer. So we made this video, had no real idea what we were doing, kind of throwing cameras around, but had a great time doing it. And then I think Marissa saw that, Marissa Garner, she took a bet on two young lads who didn't really know what we were doing, and we had like awful long blonde hair at the time, and walked into I think it was the Electric that we first met her, and I remember just being like, wow, this could be a big thing for us, and and then we left that, and she at the end she was just like, right, well, we'll just do it, and we were like, cool, yeah, we'll do it, and didn't really know what that meant, if I'm being honest. And then briefs would come through, and we'd kind of send treatments, and then slowly but surely, I suppose it's with every director, you kind of tap away at the mountain, and eventually you get somewhere which resembles like, oh, this is what directing is. And it took me me and my friend Jordan Bond, who basically is kind of the reason where I am today, I feel like he was so instrumental in it all, and proper gave me the foundations to kind of, I'd go to him at 4 a.m. and be like, hey dude, I've got this mad idea, and he'd be like, yeah, cool.
So is he the guy who you were in the duo with, Jordan?
Yeah, Jordan Bond. Yeah, Jordan Bond. Okay, yeah. All right. He doesn't direct anymore. He lives out in Spain, and just kind of, I think it. He's the smart one of us who decides, no, this is wild, and goes and has a nice life, you know.
Okay.
In Spain, yeah. Exactly. But anyway, we stopped working together maybe 3 years ago, and I think that was, we were doing a lot more content based stuff then, and it was still trying to work out what we wanted to make and all of that, and I think it just kind of, I, to be honest, I was a lot back then, so I feel like he pressed the eject button quite quickly, and we're best friends, so it kind of, when you're best friends and working together and living together, it's all a lot, and I think we kind of just wanted to make different things in the end, I think.
So you've experienced something very challenging, which has had an impact not only on directing but life in general, which is an eye injury. Do you want to tell us some more about that?
Yeah, no one knows this, so this is quite mad. But I basically 2 years ago, I woke up and thought I just was having a migraine, and basically couldn't see out of my left eye. It happened in June 2020.
Right.
So And then I kind of, and then, so it was like in and amongst lockdown and all of that madness. So yeah. Hospitals were a nightmare and all of that. And it kind of, yeah, it was a bit of a shock and I didn't really know what was going on. And that whole sort of 6 months is a bit of a blur. Excuse the pun.
Yeah. You're forgiven.
But yeah, sorry. But yeah, so I basically lived at Moorfields for a long time and like, big up those guys, they were amazing. And you know, I definitely freaked out on a number of occasions there, and for a long time we didn't really know what it was, so it was quite disconcerting. And I was like, am I going blind, like is this happening? But essentially I have a rare gene which is like my body attacks itself, and it attacked my left eye. And so essentially all my white blood vessels went to my optic nerve, kind of destroyed it. And now I've just got like a thick layer of scar tissue, which stops any light getting through. So for the first 6 months, it was terrifying. And I was working with the Just Fred gang. Fred Bonham Carter and Andrew Rawson. And they were amazing through it because, you know, we did some pretty big videos, and I was very worried that some days I'd wake up and I would be able to cope and my right eye was fine, but essentially I have no vision out of my left eye, so it's all black, and so I have no depth anymore. Yeah. Which I like to see as a superpower now, but I think my DPs will disagree. I think that whole period was quite scary because you're on set with artists that lots of directors would, you know, kill to be on set with. And I'm there doing it with one eye and an eye that's knackered and you know, struggles to focus at points. And that whole period was quite difficult, but Fred and Andrew were amazing through it and kind of made sure that my shot list was always delivered and I always kind of got what I needed. And it was kind of in that period where I think I really learned how to communicate with an artist better and kind of really built on the skills around the image making and left a lot of that to the people that are image makers. I definitely like honed skills that were outside of my actual capabilities. I think we as directors like to think that like we have a specific style and look, but actually that's garnered from the DPs that we work with and making sure that our references are translated to them better. But over that time, I was a lot more free in terms of what the aesthetic was. And what I learned over that period is really how to try and get like the best performance from talent and making sure that they feel as comfortable as possible so that then we get the best from them, which I think has lent into this year now, because it's, you know, I think it's obvious that artists feel comfortable and stuff because they come back and we've worked on so many repeat projects with artists essentially. There's good things and bad things, but yeah, it was a pretty dark time for a bit.
Seems incredible you managed to deal with that. And did you know, at what point did you get there must have been a time when you didn't know what was happening.
It's very Clockwork Orange, the whole story, and I won't go into the gory details, but there was a lot of sitting in pitch black rooms and then having needles stuck in my eye and having lots of injections and kind of it was a lot. And I suppose like it was, you know, you go in, you have all these tests done and then you have to leave. And then I remember having like a brain scan and all of that stuff. And I remember lying in the brain. I don't even really know. It all happened so quick that you kind of at the end of everything, they say all these words and you leave and you're so shocked that, and you can't take anyone with you because it's COVID. So it was kind of just me. And then you'd leave the hospital and they'd put these injections in your eyes to take photographs and you know, all of these gels. And so you leave the hospital, and I luckily live not too far from Moorfields, which was super handy. But essentially it was, I'd walk out of the hospital and kind of be kind of stumbling back home. And I think in those times as well, like you realize your own flaws in everything. So like, I'm not very good at communicating that I'm worried or stressed. And so my friends would always be like, just tell us. And I just never would. And I think I almost, there was, I suppose there's an element of embarrassment, and I got so used to being like work Charlie, where no one knew, and I had to just be like, everything's great kind of thing. And then outside of that, that kind of translated across. So, you know, even when I got told like, oh, your eyes probably, yeah, your eyes not coming back. I kind of was just like, cool, no worries. Don't worry about it. Don't need it. And then you kind of, you know, the months that follow, you're fine, everything's fine. And then suddenly you're like, oh God, that's a lot. And I suppose the more people, like more recently, I've told more people, and it's definitely like helping, you know, like I kind of have learned to, you have to laugh at it all, really.
Yeah.
Because it's, there's a lot worse things happening in the world, essentially.
Yeah, there are, but it's without question a tough thing. Charlie, you can, minimize it, but it's a thing. I mean, is there a way, you talk about the depth thing, is there any way to, do you have like other strategies where you can sort of work around that?
I think this is where like all the photography stuff is super helpful, because I think like even I listen to a lot of like DPs talk about making images and stuff like that, and the composition of images, and often depth isn't really spoken about, and I think like often if you think about more like the image is a balanced image, and that's kind of how I've started to think about image making now, and like I draw storyboards, and my DPs hate me because I'm like, here's what we're making, I've kind of only worked with kind of a few DPs this year, and they're all like friend. Like I've Pete Snyman, I've known Pete for 7-8 years. Tom Hole, I've known for 4-5 years. Courtney Bennett, I've known for like 7-8 years. Literally, Courtney would say like, I've seen you more than I've seen my wife, because we were just on set. Like it was like, cool, how many times am I seeing you next week? And it was like 3 times next week. And I suppose building that trust with someone who you're sending images and they're going yes or no, or we can make this work, or let's push it here. And, you know, there's some projects which you can have more fun with, like aesthetically, than others, like Youngblood's aesthetic, I would say compared to Louis, but Louis actually wanted us to push it quite hard. And I think like, you know, or if you compare Youngblood and George Ezra, you wouldn't necessarily think they're the same team. Mm. But they were exactly the same team. So it's stuff like that where I think we kind of, as directors and creatives, I think we are like, oh, you do that. Whereas I've never really agreed with that. And I think that's proved in the kind of work that we've done this year is all varied with lots of different artists from everywhere. And that's a testament to my team and the work that we all do. And like having those meetings where we're talking about 5 different projects in an hour and they're kind of everything's achieved in the team and you know, Untold Studios has been unbelievable to me. Like I remember at the beginning of the year just being like, are you guys ready, because this is gonna be, and they were like, you can't do this, you can't take on this brief, you've got 4 projects on already. And I'll be like, no, but we'll be in post on that one and this one and everything will be cool. And luckily everything kind of happened at a time where it could happen. And it's very rare as a director that that happens, I suppose. But it's a testament to everyone around me that this year has been what it's been with my eye. And that's from everyone from the DPs to my art director to everyone, to Annie, to Darren and Rosh at Untold, like this Mike Heath, the support system, my producers, like Matthias Gillet, who did... I mean, I think I broke him. I'm very lucky to have the people around me when my eye kind of happened to really help me get through that. And it kind of all has led to this last year, really.
Let's talk a bit about those individual projects. We were sort of in the middle of Koji. Yeah. You sort of went on from that, the family scenario of Gangster to London Dinner Party, Koji style with Payback.
Mm-hmm. And well, then... yeah, the tagline for Payback was kind of like, if Gangster's the the origins, paybacks, the fruition. So it's, or if like, so we just wanted Payback to be a vibe, but that was like the story behind that. Essentially, Nux missed his flight. So we had to shoot all of Koji's stuff, and then we had to do a pickup shoot that we actually shot in the office at Untold. We moved all the chairs and did the backdrop with Koji and Nux, and then we were shooting that. My editor was in the edit room. We were handing him the cards, and he was editing, and then it got signed off. Then we went to grade the next morning, delivered, and it went out the next day. So it was like wild. And then from there, we went into Born, which was kind of like, we wanted to do what we did with Payback, but base it more in the sort of like their, like Koji's, Cash's and King Promise's like cultures, and sort of do that as best we could. And I've spent a lot of time in Jamaica, so I can like lean on those experiences. But, you know, that was a really fun one. And we had, it was just a party really. But it was great. It was great. And then that kind of concludes the Koji chapter of the year.
You're listening to the Promo News Podcast, talking music videos in association with Loop Talent. Make sure to subscribe on your favourite platform to hear more in the series. Mabel was someone else you've shot a few videos for this year, including the amazing album experience. How did that project in particular come to fruition, and how did it differ in terms of the preparation, the concept, given it's kind of more of a long-form piece?
So we came up with the concept for that while we were shooting LOL. So we were on set and this Amazon project came about. I am very good friends with Mish, who kind of is one of the head honchos at Amazon Music. So I it's kind of a cheat code for me, but Mish is kind of like my big sister and has always kind of looked after me and is, again, someone that's helped me sort of keep going and do lots. And And so I'm sat with Mabel, and Mabel's going, well, here's the album. I hadn't heard the full album at that point. I probably only heard 7 or 8 songs of it. And she's like, so we could do this here and that here. And the ideas were just like wild. And I was like, let's bring it all back in. The idea was kind of like almost like a painting Mabel. We kind of wanted it to juxtapose against LOL, which LOL felt a bit more like thrashy, rugged, sort of grittier. And then with the kind of album experience, we wanted to almost do Mabel up Hollywood, and like, what if Mabel was an old Hollywood actress? I'm super proud of that project. Like, we shot that all in a day, and it was a lot, and then obviously Overthinking was shot half here and half in LA, so I kind of had Phil Fury out in LA. That was kind of fun because at the beginning of the year, me and Phil also collabed on the like Fanatics, Idris Elba, Malogo, Davido, and Coffee shoot. So it was kind of like nice because me and Phil, I've always looked up to Phil and he's unbelievable. So to be able to start the Mabel project off like that was so good. But again, that all happened quite naturally. Like Lisa Fu, who used to rep me kind of with Marissa, she was commissioning that and hit me up and was like, yo, Mabel, would you do it? And I was like, would love to. And then me and Mabel again just had a conversation and we're like, cool, let's do one and see where it lands. And then it kind of, and then Mabel was just like, I've got another one next week, let's do it. And then it was just like, cool, here's this. And I think at one point there were 7 treatments that we'd written for each song on the album. Or there were 7 videos that we were going to make at one point. And then that all translated into the sort of Amazon project with Mabel. But again, Mabel is someone that she's like an artist that I think really just wants to trust a director. And I think that's what a lot of it comes down to is like, I think a lot of, like I've always said that my approach as a director, first and foremost, I want the artist to leave the set having like had a really great day. And I think you get so much out of that. And like, you know, I've been on sets when I was at MTV, I was lucky enough to be on some sets and their sets are run so differently to how I run my set. And it's so fascinating. Like some directors don't really talk to talent or however you do it. And I think with me, it's like, I really want the artist to be proud of the video and not, it doesn't really matter about anything else to me. Which is almost backward. But I always think, like, in 20 years, it's going to be like, oh, do you remember Koji or Mabel and that video? And it won't be, it won't, it's not necessarily that I'm associated to that video from that viewer. So I've always had that approach. Yeah, and then I remember around that Mabel time as well, like, I did a Levi's campaign, which was stills and video, and we did a Durex commercial, and we did Sam Smith and Cat Burns live session for Amazon Music as well. So it was like, it was all, I remember it being all quite back to back, and just great. Like, every set we went on was so nice because we were all buzzing off the shoot that we'd done 2 days ago. And so then you come on to a new challenge, and it's like, right, working out something new in a new space. And it's like, I really thrive off that. And I don't know if my crew will say the same, but I kind of am happiest when I'm on set and trying to make something that is the best that we can do, you know?
That actually probably leads quite nicely onto another question we have. We kind of mentioned how busy you've been this year. I think there's about 30 projects. How do you balance that?
Balancing it is probably, I'm very pragmatic. I think pragmatic is the right word, but I think when I write, I have a rule. If I'm writing the treatment, I'll write the shot list at the same time. So that if the treatment is green lit, the shot list is already done. No one's waiting on me. And I never want people to wait on anything from me. So normally I'll have a shot list, I'll have my refs, I'll have everything good to go, and they will be delivered to every, like, my art director. I'm like, I need these props, here's 30 key props, or here's, and then everyone, and I suppose that helps productivity. No one's waiting on me going, can you send this to that person? And when you're in a run like we were on, you kind of need that, and you know, lots of late nights, lots of coffee.
I mean, it seems like that's gargantuan amount of work to do when you're pitching on something. Most people wouldn't do that, would they?
Well, yeah, I suppose.
I suppose if you know you're working with an artist and you are going to do the job, how often is that happening?
Quite a lot, I suppose. Oh. I think, well, I suppose, like, you know, when you do two Koji videos and you know there's another third coming, you know that's going to happen. With Mabel, we're kind of, you know, hopefully thinking forward in terms of the next projects. There were talks of more George, like, Louis was, we pitched on both Louis at the same time. And I think we got confirmed on the second Louis the night before we shot the first one. So it was quite nice going into that first shoot, going, A, the pressure of being like, we need to nail this, but also having that, okay, cool, well, I can build on this relationship. And I think that's, and then with Youngblood, it was like, loads of people want this video, but we kind of want you to do it. And that was Hanan Shen, and she's like amazing and really believed in me as a director and kind of really put her neck out on the line for me. It's Youngblood, so there's a lot of people. He's an exciting artist who you can do a lot with. And I think, you know, we were lucky. But again, that was like, I'd written one treatment. It had kind of, Hanan wasn't sure about it. And so then I wrote another. And then that took a lot of explaining. And then we got signed off, and then we had a weekend to, like, it basically happened from, like, we got signed off at Thursday at 4 p.m. We were on set on Monday. And that was, like, my art team, like, freezing all the, baking all the resin and painting all the backdrops and doing all of that stuff. And so a lot of these things are, you know, I often after shooting in the taxi home, I'm writing the treatment for the next one or however it might happen. But I suppose back to your point, it's nice knowing that you've got another project. I always live quite happily in that. It's quite a rush to me when you write an idea on paper and someone goes, yeah, I want to see this video. That's again quite an honor. So we're very privileged to create, and so I want to be on set, and I think every director's the same. So yeah, that over 30 projects is a lot, but it's to me, that's still not one a week. So,
well, tell us about a bit more about the George Ezra video. Yeah. That's quite. I mean, you've been doing technical stuff, but that one was
originally. I wanted that whole video to be like a full-on one take, or as in like a one take that was all shot on a MoCo that we could kind of VFX it together. I'd really wanted to play with motion control, and I really believe that we sometimes lean on shooting loads of stuff and cutting it all up, and that becomes the music video. Whereas for me, I really wanted to like let stuff breathe and allow the camera moves to almost be our cuts in it. And so with it, like a lot of it was like broken down into like, right, from this point in the track to that, like for 22 seconds, we're just going to be traveling down this column, these two rows of girls with George at the end. And I think if you're reading that on paper, it probably isn't as exciting as when you see it. And then when we were on set, it was like, I remember going on set and that video was made up of 15 shots. We finished 2 hours early. George, wow. Yeah, it was like, I think there was like 150, 160 people on set. And it was like, that was, I remember just sitting there and kind of like being on the last take and my first Jack Green coming over and being like, have you got everything? And because I'd sort of given, we have like weird, you know, like scratch the ear, touch your nose, and that means I'm good to move on or whatever. And he came over to me and he was like, are you sure you've got everything? And I was like, yeah. And we kind of called wrap and everyone kind of was, you know, that thing where you're a bit like, ooh, have we got everything?
Have
and
we then, missed something? And then the,
are you sure?
Yeah, have we missed something? And then I think a lot of the times my editor's on set with me. So he's kind of like ditting and putting stuff down on the assembly, and I remember going to him at the end and just being like, there's no gaping holes, is there? And he was like, no, we're good. And so it kind of, that was such a great experience, because I remember being like just starting out making stuff and watching a George Ezra video, and I think it was the one with him and Ian McKellen, and I was always like, oh, I bet George seems like such a lovely guy, and I'm obviously, having spent loads of time in Cornwall, he spends loads of time in Cornwall, and it was just like, I don't know, me and Jordan Bond, when we worked in a duo, were kind of like, oh, it would be sick to work with George Ezra. So to be on set and kind of do a George Ezra video was quite a thing where I was like, oh, I've come further than I potentially thought I could.
Getting on to, we've kind of mentioned it a little bit, but the latter end of this year, you've just shot the two videos for Louis Tomlinson. And he's mentioned that one of these is his favourite video he's ever done, which is obviously a bit of a...
Yeah, that's a humble brag, isn't it? Yeah.
So what was it like, obviously, working with Louis and his team?
Faye, the commissioner, she's amazing. And, like, we've spoken for years about making stuff and never really got around to doing it. And then I think this project just kind of, as most do, they're kind of like, they come at a perfect time. And I've kind of done George and Youngblood quite close together. And then it was like... Where, like, what's next? You kind of, and I remember like the Louis brief hitting my desk and being a bit confused, because I was like, really? Like, I was like, I don't know what to think, really. Louis Tomlinson is a name that is like, Louis Tomlinson could get anyone to direct his video, I'm pretty sure. And I think it was a testament to the work that we'd done that whole year. And he really wanted to do something different and adventurous. And I kind of have been, I'm working on some personal projects, and I kind of had an idea that worked kind of with what he wanted to do. And we were like, okay, well, I'll just pitch on it and we'll see where it lands. And I wrote the two ideas and we sent them off. And then it was like, yeah, cool. Louis loves the first one. Let's start cracking. And that whole experience was amazing to me. Like, coming from one direction to now starting your own thing must be so intense. And I look at Louis's life, and then you kind of have an image of what they're going to be like, and you meet them. And with Louis, it was really that. He literally is he's a lovely boy with a lovely heart who's really passionate about what he does. And I think with that that first shoot that we did, it was like, he arrived, he got ready, he came on set, and I was like, cool, you're going to be on set for 4 hours. And he was like, what? And I was like, we only need you for 4 hours, and we'll shoot everything. And he was like, all right, I don't believe you, but all right. And then literally 4 hours later, I was like, cool, you're done, see ya. And he was like, wow. I think he liked the way I knew what I wanted, and I knew that we got it. And, you know, we shot on 16 mil, so everyone's looking at a little screen, and they're kind of seeing how I normally see anyway. And it's kind of, it kind of was nice. And then the second one, again, it was like, cool, you're going to arrive at 1:00. We're going to be done with you by 9:00. And he was like, what's going on here? He was like, I don't trust it, almost. And I think that's maybe something to be said.
Just roll back a bit, Charlie. So the first one is out of my system.
Out of my system.
Yeah, so that, and I mean, they do seem connected. He's like, he's a bit of, well, he's an indie kid. There is a sort of definite retro vibe around the videos. But the second one, I think the new one, that's a bit more expansive, isn't it? It's a bit more of a, you know, you've got the cast, you've got the extras, you've got like the street.
Louis really wants the band to feature in his videos more. And I think that was kind of the thing where it was like, Louis's kind of had a lot of videos where it's been Louis and it's like camera in Louis, Louis sells records, Louis gets the views. Whereas I think Louis now is going, well, it's not just me who makes the music. It's all of the guys and they're all my friends and we all need to sort of stand together as a group. And I think that was one of the themes that we wanted to have throughout. And I think, you know, Out of My System was a big group indoor, almost put, it lent more into like the live performance, even though it wasn't live performance. And then the second one, we kind of wanted to have the band have their own hero moments, so to speak, where it was, you saw the band on their own, but the band members on their own. And with Louis, it was almost like this sort of literally walking down memory lane is kind of what the whole concept sort of sprouted from. And almost like, you know, what are those characters back home when you go back home and you're like, oh, there's the guy that didn't leave the town, or I remember being that kid, or I remember being those guys and smoking outside my mum's house, or whatever it was. And it was like, we really just wanted, that was all about like feeling and leaving the narrative open for the viewers to sort of take it how they want it. Also like Louis' fans, as all of those guys, like you could shoot a shoelace on the floor and they would find a meaning to it. And I kind of was more fascinated by what their ideas and endings to all these stories would be than necessarily the ending that I have in my head. Like it turned into a sort of, there were little narrative threads throughout it, but originally I wanted it to be like a supremely portrait based, almost photographic music video, almost like you were flicking through a photo album of your childhood type vibe. Whereas it just almost took on, when you're on set you get excited, don't you? And we started throwing the camera around and I was like, this looks amazing, let's just carry on doing this. And then the end product was, it felt really natural. And I hope Louis likes it. I think he was kind of surprised again that he was only on set for a bit, but I think it was a nice way to kind of bookend that whole year and the madness that had surrounded it, because it was quite a mad week from shooting the first one to the second one, and it just kind of summed up the whole year. It all felt not intense, because it's not, but like with an artist like Louis, the management they do ask questions and they do need to understand and they do want to know this and they do want to know that and they do want to know what's for lunch and they want to know everything. But no, it was a great experience. The whole year has been incredible, really.
But what happens next?
Yeah,
you're gonna lie down in December and hibernate a while.
I am always scared to say that I will take some time off. So I reckon I've probably got, I'm writing some short films at the moment, and that's kind of my big focus, I think, this year has been a lot of me doing stuff for other people, and I kind of just want to make something now that is about me almost, or for me. And I'm not turning around and going, what do you think of this or anything? And it can be so unapologetically me. And then I think, you know, I'm sure January will probably fill up, and then hopefully we go again next year. But I, you know, as long as we're kind of making stuff that we're all happy with and being getting the creative outlets that we need, then I'm happy. And I think this year was great because I got to experiment on so much stuff. Whereas I think next year, like, this year's the foundation. Next year I can take what I love and really go and make what I want. I can close a few of the doors that have interested me because I've kind of explored them. And so now it's all about finessing what we've done and kind of building on that, I suppose.
Sure.
Charlie, thanks very much for talking to us today.
All right then, guys. Thanks so much. Right.
This has been the Promo News Podcast, talking music videos with David Knight and Robbie Litsky of Promo News, in association with Loop Talent. Our thanks again to Charlie Sarsfield and to Sophia Whitehead at Untold Studios for her help in the production of this episode. You can find links to the work discussed in this podcast and to more work by Charlie in the description and also at promonews.tv, the home for the latest in music video creativity and production news. Subscribe to the Promo News Podcast to hear more of our conversations with leading creatives in the music video industry. This is our last episode of 2022, but we will be back in 2023 with more. So Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and bye for now.